back to the DeCesare Group Podcast. I'm your host, Jim DeCesare. This week, I'm excited to dive into Bowling Green's rich locomotive history with Jamie Johnson, Executive Director of the Historic Rail Park and Train Museum. But first, don't forget to follow the DeCesare Group across all of our social media platforms, Facebook, X, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and of course, our website, thedecesaregroup.com. That's also where you can subscribe to our newsletter, Soke Economic Development and Business News. And as always, thank you for tuning in to the podcast. This week, we turn our attention to another treasure right here in our backyard. The Historic Rail Park and Train Museum has come a long way since 2002, when the first rail cars were put on display. I recently sat down with Executive Director Jamie Johnson to talk all about the rail park's rich history and the exciting things that are happening on the horizon. Here's my conversation with Jamie Johnson. Jamie, thanks for being on the DeCesare Group Podcast. We're glad to have you with us.
Yep, I'm excited to be here.
Well, let's get started. Tell us a little bit about the history of the L&N Depot and the role the community played in bringing the national treasure back to life.
Sure. Well, so if you don't know, in 2025, which is next year, we're going to celebrate our 100th anniversary. So the building that you see today on State Street, the big limestone beautiful building, is nearly 100. And I always tell people she gets prettier every day, because as the limestone bleaches and the sun just gets brighter. So we're really excited about that milestone coming up. But to take you back a little bit with the history of the depot, so it's technically not the first depot in Bowling Green. We are the third depot now. Way back during the Civil War, that's when the first depot was built, right before the Civil War. And just prior to that, when they were talking about bringing the railroad line from Louisville down to Nashville, they were trying to figure out how to get there, and the straightest shot was really to go through Glasgow, Kentucky. But the citizens of Bowling Green pulled together, and at that time came up with $1 million. $1 million today is a nice chunk of change, but back then it was really a lot of money. So that's how much the community cared about getting the rail line through here, which tells you that somebody then knew just how important it would be to have that rail line come through Bowling Green.
So is the depot always been at the same location?
No, actually, about a mile down the road and on the technically the other side of the tracks is where the original depot was, and it burned during the Civil War. So actually some Confederate soldiers came through on horses with torches, and they burned the place down. And there was a young lady named Josie who witnessed that out her grandmother's window. And we've got a story about that in the museum. And so when that one burned down, they built what you'd call a shanty, kind of a shack of a depot. And they did not build the nice depot until 1925. And the reason that they never did is because Milton Smith, who at the time was the president of the Louisville-Nashville Railroad Line, he had spent a night out in Bowling Green, got a little rowdy. He was jailed, and he was very upset, and so he vowed that Bowling Green would never have a nice depot while he was alive. So when he died, like 2 days later, they went to work on the building that we have today. So for a really long period of time, you know, you're talking about from the 1850s to 1925, we didn't have a nice depot.
Right.
So it's very interesting history with the building itself.
And I mean, you go through a lot of towns and you see the original depot, and they're usually a lot smaller.
Yes.
Kind of wooden structures that are, you know, with a platform to the track.
Right.
And we do have a beautiful structure. I mean, I have the print in my bonus room of the depot, and it's just a wonderful facility. And I do know back in the late 90s, early 2000s, Governor Patton came to town, and I think he brought a check to get things started.
Yes.
And about that same time, if I remember correctly, Mark Wills recorded a music video there. So that, I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff. And then, of course, Speaker Richards was on the podcast not too long ago, and he's told me the story several times about him going to the depot and taking a train ride as a small boy.
Yes, and you know, and you really, and there's a block of history there. So you go from 1925 when that place opened, and you fast forward to 1979, and that is when the last train left Bowling Green, the last passenger train, and the depot shut down. So the building sat vacant for, you know, several years, and then in 1996, about that time, it's bringing it up to where you're talking about, and Operation Pride was able to secure that building. They paid $105,000 for for it, and they thought they got a bargain. And then several $1 million later,
there's a million when you it start. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Right. So you know, a great group of guys, including Johnny Webb and some other guys, got together, secured that building, and then they went to work on the restoration. So for many years, the building was technically, being operated by Operation Pride. And then once they got their restoration done, that's when the building became available for somebody to step up and actually run it as something.
Yeah. So you've been involved with the depot for what, about 10 years now? Talk about some of the events and activities that have been added, you know, since you've jumped on board. No pun intended.
Sure. Yep. Well, I did. I jumped on board a train that wasn't moving very fast at the time. In fact, one of my favorite things is that the trains don't go anywhere, because if they did, that's a whole nother maintenance.
It's a whole other deal that you got to work
is.
With.
Yes. So, we've done the Polar Express for over 20 years now, and that was really the only event that we had going on when I got to the depot back in 2014. And so we immediately went to work on adding events to create some excitement to get local people back in our doors, because once you come to the train museum, you've seen it, you've done the tour, why would you come back? So we have to give people a reason to come back. And we just finished up our Sip and Putt mini golf event, where we really played putt-putt golf in the museum, in the rail cars. It was a wild time. And the exciting thing is that when we did our daytime putting event, we asked for a show of hands of who had never been to the depot before. We had, I think, three teams that had been there before. Everybody else was brand new. And we love that, because that means we're getting new people in the door that get exposure to what we do. So now, we've got about 6 to 8 events that we do annually. We do Romance at the Rail Park, where you can have dinner on the dining car. We've been doing that for 10 years. The Sip and Putt event that I just mentioned always happens in March. Then we take a little bit of a breather, and in the summer, in July, we do the BG Wine Fest. And that's a really exciting event for us, because we are the only sanctioned event by the Kentucky Wineries Association in the city of Bowling Green. So anybody else in Bowling Green can have a wine fest. They just can't have one sanctioned by the KWA. So we're proud of that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It is. Yeah. So we bring in wineries from all over Kentucky. And, we have usually about 500 people at that event, live music. And again, it gets a group of people out that hadn't been to the depot. And they come there and they see what we're all about. Then that's when they learn that, oh, I can, I can rent the space for a party, a wedding, anything like that. And then they see that sometimes it gets people even in the rail cars who wouldn't normally come out and go. And then when they go through and they see that, these really are kind of interesting, and then they come back and they bring their family. So it's a good thing for that. And then we round out the year with our Rail Park Rendezvous, which is our annual fundraiser. We've done fire shows, circus theme shows, all kinds of crazy stuff. We try to make them more entertaining so people feel like they're having fun at our fundraiser. And this year we're doing dueling pianos. That happens in September. And then comes the Polar Express.
Yeah.
And that's just,
and it sells out. That books up quickly.
It does.
Every year.
Yes. And it's a free event for the community. We do some things now to try to help ease the pain with getting tickets, because they are free tickets. It's the tough part is getting them.
Yeah.
We'll have about 4,000 people come through our doors in those 2 weeks. And that's a lot of people for us, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And Amy and I have been to a few events. We've been to the Valentine's dinner in the car, and watched a movie, my band has played there a few times, so it's a loud room.
It is a loud room. It's one of those things, people come in and we're like, I'm not sure how this is going to do with music. And one year for Romance at the Rail Park, well, for several years actually, we had a harpist that would come in and play the harp. And when they first came out to check out our venue, they're like, oh, we don't know if this is going to sound good. And it was beautiful. The acoustics were perfect for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, we when the band plays there, we make it work. And and I think I've been to a casino night there before.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I've attended several events there, and it's just a wonderful facility. And as you mentioned, people can rent that. It's an event facility as well. So if you want to have a wedding reception there or some time of event, it's available.
It is. Yeah. I mean, that is one of the revenue streams that we have, is that we're open as a venue, and we like to keep it as full as possible.
Sure.
So we like something happening all the time.
So some people still think of the depot as a library.
They do.
It was, I think, the first virtual library in the state.
Yes.
And that the city of Bowling Green owns and funds the operation. So what kind of reaction do you get from visitors when they come in? And obviously, do people still come in going, this is the library here?
Absolutely. I mean, it usually, every couple of months or so, someone will come in looking for the computer lab.
Yep.
We'll have people show up with a carload of books ready to drop them off for the book sale. And and so, you know, some people still haven't gotten the message, and that's okay. You know, we help them out and get them what they need. But yes, when they first restored the depot, one of the ways that they could get some access to funding was by putting a library in there. And
right.
So the library did have a location there for several years, and that was very beneficial. And so, and there was a period of time where the city and county jointly owned the actual property, and it was that way for several years. And then in most recent years, we now are owned by the Warren County Economic Development Authority downtown.
Okay.
So technically, Warren County government owns our building, and then we have an essentially a lease agreement with them, and so we manage the property. So we get the question sometime about, well, people think that we're owned by the city, and they also think that the city funds us, and that's not true. Doesn't mean we don't wish it was true.
Yeah.
But you know, we're not government funded. We have applied for and received some federal and some state grants. Most of that happened when Operation Pride was actually operating the facility. And so we don't dwell on that too much. I mean, we're excited that, you know, the county's very supportive of us and wants us to do well. And what we really want is to not need them. We want to be good stewards of the building. We want to be able to self-sustain and operate ourselves financially. And so we try to do that the best we can, because we know if we have to ask for money, money comes with strings.
Oh yeah,
we don't like strings.
Yeah, it always has. Regardless of what you're doing, especially if you're working with quasi or government agencies, every dollar has a boundary, and you know,
sure,
you have to respect those boundaries and use them the appropriate way. Talking about visitors, I mean, I'm guessing you probably get visitors from all over the world.
We do. We really get people that come globally, and a lot of that really can be attributed to the Corvette Museum, because they have, you know, international reach, and so that definitely helps. And then you know, there's train enthusiasts all across the country. Of course, we get a lot of people that visit, and this is just true for Kentucky all over, but Californians love to come to Kentucky. Maybe they're coming for the bourbon. I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
It really doesn't, as long as they stop to see us.
Yeah.
And so, and we get a lot of people from up north. You know, in reality, if you do think back to the Civil War, it was the Union Army that was, they were more sophisticated and understood how to use technology and the rail lines to their advantage, whereas the Confederates just didn't. And it didn't mean that they were any less smart, because they certainly were smart enough, but they just weren't as familiar with how to use the rail line.
Right.
And so, up north, there are more active rail lines today, passenger travel, that kind of thing. So a lot of the people that are coming from the north that are on their way to the south for spring break, fall break, all those things, it brings a lot of travelers to us. And so, you know, when we track zip codes, like the five top zip codes come from the north and then California. And when the visitors come, you know, we hear a very common compliment to us, and that is that we really do, and I'm not saying it because I'm biased, but we do have one of the best train museums around the nation. And certainly there are some bigger and larger and more sophisticated than us, but we have a really nice train consist. We've got some really unique and vintage cars, and a lot of train museums you go to, they just have what we call open stock, and you can just walk through them, and they're not anything nice to look at.
Right.
We spend a lot of money and time and energy and keeping our cars restored and nice, and then we have such a big, beautiful building, a really nice museum. And usually when you're traveling and going to a train museum, you get one of those things, but not all of those things together, and that's
right.
Really what makes us unique. Plus, we do a guided tour, and so we get really good reviews on TripAdvisor and those kinds of things, and so we're really proud of that.
Yeah, and there's something for the whole family. And,
yes.
And talk a little bit about the interactive components of the museum and what people can see when they come and visit you.
Sure. So one of the things, the most exciting thing, if you're going to take the time to come to the rail park, you've got to do the rail car tour. Our guides take you through five of the eight restored cars that we have, and they give you a little bit of history. It's about a 45-minute tour, so they're giving you some history, but they're also telling you some cool things that are going on or things that you might not know. So, you know, our tour is not really geared to the history buff or the train buff. It's really geared to the average person that doesn't know that much about trains. And so that makes it kind of fun. They get to come through and see things that they just couldn't imagine were in a train car. Most people that do our tour have never even been inside of a rail car. And then we it's self-guided through the museum. And our museum is... It's child-friendly, but it's not like, you know, your kid's not going to walk out of our museum sweating because they just jumped up and down for 15 minutes. And
right.
So some people think that child-friendly is that. It is not. But we have a circus train area where kids can sit down and play at a table if they want to. So, you know, mom and dad or grandparents can walk around and read. We have a private theater in there where we show a short video about Pullman porters. So there is a little bit of something for everyone. And then probably, you know, the coolest, you know, family-friendly kind of thing there is the model train layout. The show modular model railroad club operates that, and it's HO scale. It's huge. We've had people from other train museums come down to visit us to take a look at that to see what's in it. So that's a lot of fun too.
And I know when our own engineer of the podcast was a young boy, mm-hmm. we used to go look at the trains a lot.
Yes.
he was very much into Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yes.
So
we have a Thomas the Tank that we throw on there sometimes, and he still chugs around the tracks.
Yeah. So are you open year round? I mean, I know you're open year round, but tell us about your schedule and when people can come and see you.
So we just this last week opened back up to 7 days a week. So we're open every day, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. When we get into the winter months, we will shut down a couple days a week just because it's slow.
Yeah.
And then sometimes we extend our hours a little bit more, but we are open daily for train tours. You can actually go online to our website, historicrailpark.com, and we have online ticketing that you can do for the rail park. We've also got a couple other things on there, like if you want to take a trolley ride, you know, you can get to those tickets from there. We do Unseen Bowling Green, which is walking tours. You can get on there and find those tickets. And, you know, we've got different discounted rates if you're senior, veteran, all those kinds of things. And
right.
So we encourage people to get on there and peruse our website and see what we have to offer.
And I think I would not be doing the depot any justice, the rail park any justice, or our community any justice if I didn't mention opportunities to help support the train.
Absolutely. Yes, yes.
The rail park.
So, you know, in 2019, we actually started doing annual fundraising campaigns because what we learned is that people drive by our building, they see a big, beautiful building, and they think, man, they're doing good. That place looks nice. They probably don't need any help. And that couldn't be truer that we do need help of that. So if you think about it, you know, people always look good on the outside, but sometimes they're not so good on the inside.
It's a 100-year-old building.
It is. And so, you know, we started out with a Save the Depot campaign to let the community know that, hey, we need you to step up and support us just like you do any other nonprofit that you want to keep in your community. And then every year that morphed into something different. We would pick out a project. And so most recently, last year our campaign was to light up the depot. So we raised money so that we could put up lights on the building and light up the train cars for Christmas. Because one of the depressing things is you show up for Polar Express and it kind of looks like you're going to a haunted house because there's no lights and it's doom and gloom. So we were really successful in raising that money last year. And we actually had something exciting happen that led into what we're campaigning for this year. So our rail cars require constant restoration, and we were last year working to secure funding to be able to put a UV protectant coating on the outside of the cars. And what that would do is kind of brighten them up a little bit, make them a little shiny, but also slow down deterioration.
Yeah.
So when we had someone come out to look at doing that work, what we learned is that most of the cars, we couldn't even use that product because the cars were in such disrepair on the outside that, you know, you just can't put that stuff over rust. And they're like, oh, you've got to fix all these things.
Yeah.
And so we had somebody that was going to work on paint for us to come down. And as it worked out, the donors that had donated to that project specifically for the trains were agreeable to us pulling their funds together and to actually paint some cars. So if you drive by today, you don't even have to come on the property. You can be at the stoplight where you can look across the street and see our cars, and it is obvious that two of them are really pretty and the rest of them are not. So we got 1.5 cars painted last year. We painted our E8 diesel locomotive, which is the engine.
Yep.
And she's beautiful. And then next to that, we painted one side of the railway post office car. And so
The side you can see,
the street side. And we did that on purpose because we wanted people to see the difference in how good they can look and then how much work we need to do. So this year we just kicked off our campaign to raise $175,000 because that is what it will take to do the welding work needed and then paint the rest of the car. So even the other side of the railway post office car needs some welding work before we can paint it. Our Duncan Hines diner actually needs pretty much complete new skin on the inside outside of the car. So all new metal work. And that's probably the most expensive one.
I can imagine.
Yes.
And we're going to put a link in the show notes to the website if anybody wants to learn more about what all you all are doing there at the rail park. So you talked about some of the projects you having going on, but what else is on the horizon for the rail park and the train museum?
Yeah. So a couple of years ago, some people might remember, we also started a campaign to raise money to cover the rail cars, because that's the biggest challenge. They're not covered, and that's why we keep having so many problems.
Yeah.
And so what we were raising money for at that time was to actually go to an architect and have them make the drawings and stuff like that, so and figure out what we would need. So that is one of those projects that it's on the back burner, but only because when we open that up, I mean, that's going to take several million dollars to do. But that is something that is on our radar that we're actively looking at, because we don't want to keep repainting the cars. We want to paint them once and be done for a while. So we've got some restoration projects that are coming up. Also, in celebration of our of 2025, when we turn 100, we have a couple of projects that build up to get us looking good for our anniversary. Nobody, or our big birthday celebration, nobody wants to look bad on their birthday.
Right.
So we've got some landscape projects to do. We've got some window restoration to do on the building. So as we complete these projects, we'll be opening up another one. And that's the thing. There's always, you know, what's next. We did this past year, and I think most people hopefully are aware now that we have the trolley and as a part of the rail park. And so the trolley does historic city trolley tours. People can rent it. We probably get more business off private rentals for the trolley than anything. And so that was really exciting for us when we were able to add the trolley. We were able to add some staff, which makes us a little bit bigger so that we can do more things. So a lot of what we have on the horizon is restoration work.
Gotcha.
We just finished interior work on our segregated passenger car. There's only four, I think, of those. Or maybe it's two. Anyway, there's not very many of those that even exist, but we have, well, technically we have one of two that exist that traveled the Louisville-Nashville line.
Okay.
And it's an all-wooden car inside and out. And the other one is at the Kentucky Railway Museum in New Haven.
I got you.
Theirs has been restored, but it's not restored anymore. It's kind of like the Titanic. It just,
yeah,
it's all intact. But so we're excited to have, you know, a rare car like that that we can work on.
Going back to the lights that you were talking about earlier, are they similar to like the lights that are at Cherry Hall, where you can make the colors different? Or
they are, yeah. So on the building, it's actually permanent lights that are kind of like the string LED lights, something very similar to that. We just had to make sure that we got something really nice and commercial grade that would last. And so those outline the top of the building, and so we can change the colors of those, turn them on anytime we want. We had Mardi Gras colored lights on during our Romance at the Rail Park, because that was the theme we did. When we had the sip and putt, we turned the lights on green. So that was fun. So the building lights are always there. And then the rail car lights are your traditional, you know, big, giant, colorful bulbs. And those we do put up and take down. But they are customized to the size and the layout of the rail cars. And so, yeah. And if you're on our mailing list, then you probably got a Christmas card from us this year with our with our trains all lit up.
I think I did.
Oh, you did. Good. Yeah. You know, the easiest way to get on there is be a donor. If you donate one time. So people will ask me, how do I get on your email list so we know what you have going on? And I tell them, you have to pay to get on it. We don't put people on the email or mail list that don't want to be on there. So we figure if you make a donation, $5 or $5,000,
you're invested.
Then we think, well, you must want to know what we're doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. They become investors then, and you gotta keep your investors happy.
That's right.
So did I miss anything? Is there anything that you want to talk about that I didn't cover?
No, I mean, you know, I'm just, I always, you know, am excited about an opportunity to, you know, talk to people, and maybe somebody out there that's listening has never heard of the depot or didn't know we were there or had no idea that we're not still, you know, the library. So if you haven't been to the depot, I encourage you to come out. You won't be disappointed. If you've got friends or family coming in town, it's a great thing to bring them to do. You can even save us for a rainy day, and you know, because the rail cars are heated, they are cooled. So come out and take a tour and see what we've got.
And tell everybody where you are.
We are located at 401 Kentucky Street. So we are downtown, across the street from the skate park, catty corner from the ballpark. So if you're at the depot when there's a Bowling Green Hot Rods game going on, you can hear everything going on. You can hear all the scores just hanging out at the depot.
All right. Well, fantastic. Well, Jamie, thank you for being on the DeCesare Group podcast.
Thank you.
I want to thank Jamie Johnson, Executive Director of the Historic Rail Park and Train Museum, for coming on the podcast. And thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the DeCesare Group podcast on your preferred platform. Leave us a review and share your feedback with us. The DeCesare Group podcast is produced by the DeCesare Group, a full-service public relations and consulting business in South Central Kentucky. Our engineer is the man who keeps the train on the tracks, Justin DeCesare, with content contributions from Brooke Mattingly and Amy DeCesare. I'm Jim DeCesare, and join us again next time for the DeCesare Group Podcast.